Hello and welcome back to the quarterly Kier Marbach podcast, episode Q4 2020. And for those listeners out there asking, no, we still haven't come up with a witty name yet, but I do have a few ideas I'm chewing on. We thought for our year-end podcast, we would take a look back at this most unusual year of 2020 and ask some general investment questions. What did we learn from this? And what lessons can investors take away from this experience? And so with me to talk through this is our Chief Investment Officer, Mark Foster. Welcome back, Mark.
Thanks, Zach. Good to be here.
So without further ado, let's dive in. Mark, you've been the Chief Investment Officer at Kier Marbach for over 20 years. What did you learn from this past year? And just as importantly, what are some key points for investors to take away from this last year?
Yeah, it's a great question. One of the things I like about this business is that you're constantly learning, processing new information, and adjusting to these changes. At the same time, there are several time-tested investing principles that apply even in this strange and difficult year. So today, I wanted to share the five most evident principles that I think applied for this past year. First of all, emotional decisions can derail your investment plan. You know, when the market went into a free fall in March, it was easy to panic. We'd never seen anything like this before, and we were bombarded with all this fear 24/7 by the news media. Death tolls mounted by the day, and we witnessed the fastest market decline in history. We stood around and asked ourselves, should we cut our losses and move to cash? Our emotions can begin to take over. However, the best long-term strategy is to stick with your plan. I recall back in 2008-2009 telling my wife to just don't open the account statements, stick them in a drawer and wait 6 months. The key is having a plan you are comfortable with and staying with it. Just as the market recovered from the 08-09 decline, they've largely recovered from this March decline as well. Secondly, markets are unpredictable in the short term. You know, it's interesting that everybody wants to focus on the short term. I used to get calls from financial journalists wanting a comment on the market. They'd send me an email and ask if I was available after the close for a comment. Their questions were always along the lines of, the market is up today, what do you think investors are focused on? I did that for several years and then decided it wasn't very useful for me or for investors. It's the wrong focus. Take the election. Conventional wisdom was the market was going down if Biden was elected, just as it thought it was going down in 2016 if Trump was elected. It's just not possible to tell what the market will do on a short-term basis, and so investors should really stop trying to guess that.
You know, just to jump in real quick, those are two great points. Having a plan and sticking to it is key to long-term success. Kier Marbach focuses on having an investment plan with each of our clients when we start a relationship and also continuing to monitor that plan to ensure it fits with clients' goals and objectives for their investment needs. Oftentimes, we're saving for life events like retirement, but also things like education, home buying, or even legacy planning. And each of those goals will have different investment timelines and therefore possible different investment strategies. As an investor, understanding your goals and investment timeline, I think, helps with not allowing your emotions to take over when there are short-term market concerns.
Point number three for me is don't fight the Fed. After the financial crisis of 08-09, the Federal Reserve kept rates at or near zero and provided liquidity for much of the next decade. Yet in March, they went even further, pledging to keep rates low through 2023, buying a diverse set of corporate bonds, treasuries, and virtually anything that needed liquidity. That put a floor under the debt and equity markets. Historically, anytime the Fed gets aggressive, investors usually do very well. Number four, bad times present great opportunities. While we've already confirmed that the act of investing more money after seeing the market plunge is very difficult, it's also the best time to invest. I started at Kier Marbach & Company in July of 1987. In October of that year, the market went down 22% in one day. I remember we were all sitting around the conference room. It just felt awful. Yet it turned out to be a great buying opportunity, and the decline was quickly forgotten as the market moved higher over the next several years. I've been doing this for about 40 years and I've seen many cycles. Each looks very scary at the time, but in hindsight, they've all presented great buying opportunities. And lastly, in a similar vein, picking the perfect time to invest is very hard. A common idiom for successful investing is, it's the time in the market, not timing the market, that matters. Instead of waiting for the ideal time to start investing, which is hard to determine and even harder to predict, just jump in by establishing a disciplined process to invest and add money over time. Zach, as you know, we did have a new Kerr Marbach client who started her account right at the bottom in March and now has an 80% gain to show for it. But I think she would tell you it was just more luck than anything.
Great point. And I always think for every story of a person timing, jumping into the market just in the right time, there's just as many people getting out at the bottom and missing out on the pending market recovery. The buy low, sell high is a simple term, but I think hard to execute. Mickey Kim spends a lot of time writing about behavioral finance in our quarterly letters, as well as in the Republic and the Indianapolis Business Journal. When we talk about this topic of timing, I go back to his March 9th article when the pandemic was just getting started, titled, Stay Calm, Stay In, and Stay the Course. And the one line I take away from that is, quote, an investor who exited the market and subsequently missed just 10 of the best performing days in the past 20 years would have lost out on more than half of the gains. That's 7,300 days in 20 years, and you can't miss 10 of them. I would encourage our listeners to visit our insights page on our website and give that a read if you have not already. That just reinforces my earlier point on the importance of having an investment plan, understanding your goals, and sticking with it through the market fluctuations.
Yeah, so in summary for me, while each cycle looks somewhat different, these principles have generally stayed consistent, and I think they can help investors navigate the turbulence.
You know, Mark, this year more than ever highlights the importance of your five key points you just shared with us. To switch gears just a little, as we turn the calendar to 2021, do you have any thoughts on the market currently and expectations for the upcoming year? Now, I'm going to preference that with understanding if I were to ask you the same question a year ago, I don't think you would have brought up anything about pandemics or economic shutdowns.
Yes, and I hope not to see them again either. There's a couple of things worth noting. First, value stocks and Kerr Marbach had an outstanding fourth quarter. This was our biggest return versus the S&P 500 in a quarter since the first quarter of 2001. The introduction of the vaccine gave investors confidence to look over the valley and begin to focus on the recovery, and that provided a big lift to the broad market rather than just big tech or pandemic-related stories. And we're obviously very hopeful that will continue into 21. Second, we've seen massive spending by the federal government. They have attempted to sustain businesses and people most impacted by the pandemic. And while this has blown away prior deficit numbers, the actual payments aren't at historical levels due to very low interest rates. If all this spending leads to further inflation and higher rates, then we have a problem. So we'll be watching this closely over the next few quarters. Finally, there are clearly some excesses in the market. New IPOs, or initial public offerings, these are companies just coming public, have absolutely exploded in numbers. Story stocks such as clean energy, electric vehicles, cannabis, and tech have had huge moves. I ran a screen the other day to quantify what this looked like. So I looked at all stocks greater than $1 billion in market value. That's the shares outstanding times the market price, so the size of the company. That generated negative EBITDA over the trailing 12 months, and EBITDA is sort of an operating earnings type number. And then I looked at their price performance. There were 335 names, and they rose on average 100%. This isn't normal. This isn't how markets normally work. Investors in these type of names need to be a little more focused on the fundamentals.
Okay, Mark, now for the listeners. Can you break down what that screen means in layman's terms?
Yeah, it simply means that there were a lot of unprofitable companies whose stocks went up a lot last year, and are discounting some pretty rosy futures that may or may not pan out. I recall back in 1999-2000, there was a lot of focus on what was then the new internet and how many people were looking at various websites. The idea was the more eyeballs you had, once you turned those into paying customers, you would print money. It didn't turn out that way for most, as the shakeout crushed many of those companies. Today, the focus is on TAM, or total available market, or simply what's the size of the market that the company is in. The idea is that if the market size is $5 billion, but the company only has $1 million in sales, there's this huge runway for growth. Here's a good example of that. Earlier this year, a company called Nikola is a manufacturer of electric pickup trucks. Back in February, before the pandemic, the stock was around 10. By June, it was trading at 93. This was a company with really no product at that time, and as a result, they had no revenues. But people obviously were very optimistic about what was going on. And here's how this TAM math works as you go through this example. In 2019, there were roughly 12.2 million truck and SUV sales in the United States. So if electric vehicles could capture 10% of that market, that would be 1.2 million trucks being sold over the course of a year. And people looked at that and said, well, you know, Ford sells 900,000 trucks. If Nikola can sell north of 1 million trucks, why couldn't Nikola be valued similar to Ford? And in fact, Ford today has a $35 billion market cap, and Nikola at its peak was $36 billion. Now, subsequent to that, the stock has declined from 93 back down to 15. They've still yet to produce the vehicle. This might still work. It's an attractive looking vehicle, but taking something from the drawing board to the marketplace turns out to be pretty difficult. We will watch that story as it unfolds. My guess is that this will end the same way as it did the last time, that those that execute the best will be the winners, and many of these companies will not exist in 3 years. So generally, the markets are slightly overvalued, but rates are low and earnings are growing, so the environment is decent. We think the key ingredients are still positive, but we want to be selective with an eye on valuations.
That was a great breakdown, and I really like that Nikola example. I have seen some stuff in the news about it, so I think it was very helpful to kind of hear a breakdown. Mark, this was another informative conversation. I do thank you for joining us again today to share your market takeaways and outlooks for the new year. Having someone with your market experience break down a few points to take away from last year, I think is really helpful as investors look at the markets. For our listeners, let's cheers for a happy and prosperous 2021. And with that, we will look forward to catching up with everyone next quarter. Thanks.